Well, longtime listeners to North by Northwest will recognize the names Rika Rubsat and John Bartlett. They are fairly regular here every month or so, talking about, well, we've been talking about the history of British Columbia through the vehicle of folk music, and just tracing folk music in BC and around Canada as well. Now, Rika and John are longtime collectors of folk music. They've written extensively about folk music for many journals and different publications. They have traveled around North America and to Europe performing the folk music and helping other people, teaching about it. They've done radio shows and other kinds of educational vehicles as well. Well, not so very long ago, a listener wrote in to say that Vera Johnson had gone into a nursing home on Vancouver Island, and she asked if Rika and John could do a bit of a tribute to Vera Johnson and her music. And I heard some of Vera Johnson's music on LP before. She was just a fantastic satirical songwriter. Lots of humor, lots of great astute political observation, and just a captivating way with the audience. So Rika and John came in fairly recently with LPs under their arms, and we talked about Vera Johnson and started out by talking about when Rika met her and saw her in the first place.
This was International Women's Year, so they had a heavy lineup of strong women. They had her, they had Melvina Reynolds, they had Alanis Apumsawain, they had Sweet Honey and the Rock, so there was a kind of a quadruple whammy of heavy-duty women's singers who sang about women's issues. And the thing that stood out about Vera is that she was this, I mean, she couldn't have been more than about 5'2", 5'3", this kind of roly-poly. You'd sort of expect her to see her in the aisles of the Shop Easy with her shopping cart, and here she was up on the Mariposa stage with her Hawaiian shirt on singing these incredible songs.
Well, she was everyone's grandma, in a manner of speaking. I think she billed herself as a singing grandma.
But the women's issues, when we read her biography, she did a short biography for the Canadian Society for Traditional Music Bulletin, and in there she mentions in passing, among all the songwriting and touring and hitchhiking around that she's doing, she mentions in passing, "And then my second marriage broke up." And I went, hang on a minute, didn't hear about the first one yet. And she kind of handled all that as well. And this next song kind of illustrates that. It talks about getting divorced. Now, people of my parents' generation, when they had to get divorced, you had to sort of stage an adultery event that had to be witnessed and then testified about.
You had to show guilt.
Right, right.
One of the parties had to be guilty. And I think when Trudeau brought in the revisions to the law in 67, it became no-fault divorce. Like kind of no-fault auto insurance. It made a lot of sense that people who couldn't and hadn't lived together for years, there was a huge explosion of instant divorces took place immediately after that thing went through.
Because they didn't have to go through all that crazy
rigmarole,
right?
Yeah.
That's right. And Vera was right on the bandwagon, so she did a do-it-yourself divorce.
Back in 1971, I did something that was really interesting and a lot of fun. I got a divorce. And the reason it was such fun was because I did it all myself without the help of a lawyer. I drew up the documents and typed them, and I took them into the court registry and filed them. And when the trial date came around, I went into court myself and talked to the judge, and he granted the divorce in about 5 minutes. And instead of it costing me somewhere between $300 and $600, it would have cost me $36, but I managed to cut a couple of corners. And it actually cost me $33.50. And on top of that, I got a song out of it. Do it yourself is all the rage. This is the hobby merchant's age. Learn how to crochet or sew or knit. Brew your own beer with a special kit. Make leather purses, try painting or weaving or building bookshelves in the wall. Or if you want something a bit more exciting, here is the best of them all, the do-it-yourself divorce. You have to be married, of course. You study petitions and draw up your own. You don't need a lawyer, you do it alone. You handle the case in court. It's really an elegant sport. And $36 is all that it costs, the do-it-yourself divorce. You will enjoy your day in court.
the judge you need support, giving details of your erring spouse, making it clear why he's such a louse. Then when it's over, there's 3 months of waiting before you can get your decree. The waiting time gives you a chance to consider just who the next one will be. Do it yourself, divorce. You have to be married, of course. You study petitions and draw up your own. You don't need a lawyer, you do it alone. You handle the case in court. It's really an elegant sport. $36 is all that it costs. A do-it-yourself divorce.
Vera Johnson with the do-it-yourself divorce, and an example there, I think, of the fun that people had when they went to see her, right? I mean, her stage presence, what a great
time. It was like a conversation, essentially. There was no performer audience barrier. She was just somebody who happened to be up there rather than in the audience. That was actually recorded at the Green Cove Coffee House, which we used to run back in the 70s, and she was backed up there by Kathy Fink and Duck Donald, which some of our listeners might know about.
Absolutely.
And what she did, as I said earlier, she did things in her 40s, in the late 50s and early 60s, that people like me did in the late 60s and early 70s, which is hitchhiking around. And what she did, she went to England and she sort of lived there intermittently and hitchhiked around and did folk clubs. And then when she ran out of money, she'd work at office overload jobs, get a little money, and then get some more bookings at a folk club and go on her merry way.
And so that was in the 50s and in the 1960s,
and
when
the 60s,
she was 40 years old.
That's right. Huh. I mean, she was born in 1920.
What an adventurous soul.
And so completely, I mean, she wasn't one of these people who wore, you know, colorful gypsy outfits with all sorts of beads and funny hats. I mean, some of these people who are eccentric, they kind of have to display their eccentricity. She dressed in sort of Dacron shirts and running shoes, and she was so, you wouldn't notice her on the street. But her way of singing was very compelling, mm-hmm. that you have to listen to her. The timbre of her voice and the way she enunciated and the way she expressed herself engaged you in such a way that you had to listen to her. And in that sense, she was a very compelling performer. One of the places she traveled to was the Soviet Union. And this was in the days when not many people traveled to the Soviet Union. And it was just kind of one of those things, well, oh, okay, well, I'll go there. And people would say, well, Vera, no. And she said, well, what's the big deal? And she did it. And this next song is kind of relates to that indirectly. It's called The Minx from Pinsk. And I've seen her perform this song a number of times, and it's kind of, she had these sort of humorous semi-throwaway songs. They didn't deal with social issues, but they kind of expressed her wit and her sort of joie de vivre.
1949 was when she made this one.
Okay, some years ago, a friend of mine, Russian friend, taught me a little song that went like this. Бедная девица, бедная я, бедная улья-кулья, доля моя. 10 я любила, дьявола пособила, только одного добиться не могу. And I like this song so much, I decided to make a rough translation of it. It had to be pretty rough because I don't speak any Russian. And it came out like this. The Russian steps are cold and bare. They have no escalators. And when the winter blizzards blow, you need for boots and gaiters. The wind howls like a banshee goes, but inside we are warm as toast. We sit around the samovar, and this is what we sing. That makes from I never will forget. So young and so plump, I'm dreaming of her yet. In her neck of Pushka, she was beautiful and gay. That makes from pink, she stole my heart away. That's the chorus. I want you all to sing it, so I'm going to go over it with you very quickly. That minx from Pinks, capital P-I-N-S-K. Pinksk. I understand it's a place in Russia somewhere near Omsk. I never will forget, so young, so plump, I'm dreaming of her yet.
And some people have asked me, what part of the body is that? Well, I'm not sure, but John Pierce thinks it's something like a now, as in, I wonder who's kissing her now. In her red babushka, that's the scarf you tie around your head. She was beautiful. Oh, the babushka can also be translated as grandmother, but you look pretty silly with your grandmother tied around your head. She was beautiful and gay, that minx from Pink. She stole my heart away. Hoy, that's the ethnic bit, and you're really all supposed to leap into the air at that point, but I won't insist on it. Now, I want you to sing that, and I also want you to clap. And in the last half of the chorus, you clap faster and faster until you end up in a wild frenzy. Hoy. Russian steps are cold and bare. They have no escalators. And when the winter blizzards blow, you need fur boots and gaiters. The wind howls like a banshee goes, but inside we are warm as toes. We sit around the samovar, and this is what we sing. That makes strong. I so young as so plum punch. Clap! Beautiful and gay, that makes something. Very good. Some of you haven't got the clap yet. Maybe you'll pick it up next time round. If I live a thousand years, I won't forget my Olga. Many happy days we spent canoeing on the Volga. She would paddle, I would sing, and pluck the bala like a string. And the song I sang to her, it always was the same. She was mine. It was so romantic that it makes me want to cry. He took her out on winter nights, joyriding in a droshky. When the winter turned to spring, he gave her a diamond ring. All my happiness was gone, it turned to black despair. Particularly exquisite bits of rhyming in the last verse. If you want a happy life, take my advice, tovarich. Stay away from girls and never, never think of marriage. Just when you think of wedding bells, she runs off with someone else. Better you should cut your throat before that day arrives.
that enthusiasm. They were, hey, getting ready to do it there.
She was a consummate crowd manager.
Oh, yes.
That was the Amberley Folk Club in Sussex. The stuff we're hearing today is from two albums, one made in Amberley, one made here in Vancouver.
So Sussex in England?
That's right.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Yeah. So she was like half and half, so it sort of fits nicely.
Right.
Her Russian pronunciation was phenomenal there, and we actually have a CD that good old Curtis sent us. Curtis Vanell, we are indebted to him for the digitalization of these ancient rotting tapes. And putting them in an order that we can actually access them. So thank you, Curtis. But he gave us one of her singing in 1961 at the Folk Song Circle in German. 1960, John just corrected. And her German was impeccable, too, so she had a wonderful ear.
That's a tribute to Vera Johnson, Part 1, with Rika Rubsat and John Bartlett. And we're going to head back to our tribute this morning to singer and songwriter Vera Johnson. She was born in 1920 and spent much of her life traveling around Canada and England and Russia and other parts of the world singing and writing songs and taking other jobs when she wasn't able to get some singing gigs. She was a free spirit and a very funny and political songwriter as well. Vera Johnson was brought to our attention by a listener who suggested she would love to hear a tribute to Vera and her music. So Rika Rubsat and John Bartlett, who are regulars here on North by Northwest and who are collectors and performers of folk music in Canada and beyond, they took up the challenge and are telling us the musical story of Vera Johnson this morning.
The next cut is a song called The Word, and it comes from a decision made by the BC Department of Education as it then was. This is back in 67, I believe, about censorship. Vera was a good liberal in the small L sense, and she was always for liberation of the individual and of society from all these ridiculous restraints which chained people in the 50s and 60s, or certainly people thought they were being chained. So this is The Word, and this is her way of dealing with a social problem such as censorship.
Some years ago, some people in British Columbia got very upset because a story on the grade 12 English literature course had a four-letter word in it. I won't tell you what the word was, but it's sometimes used as a noun and sometimes as a verb, and quite often people add ing and use it as an adjective. And these people made such a fuss that the Department of Education sent a notice around to all the teachers telling them, if you like, when you're teaching this particular story, you can pick up a pencil and cross out this offensive word. And this is a song about what happened. It has a pre-censored chorus. Every time I go, I would like you to go, and that indicates a missing syllable. And I hope you're familiar with the words that are missing, or you won't get anything on the song at all. The BC Department of Education told some English teachers recently, if you want to delete a certain word from a grade 12 textbook, pick up a pencil and please feel free. The committee who had passed the book felt their faces turning red, so they all resigned in protest, and this is what they said. You may think we're censors, but we're only here to teach. You may think we're preachers, but we didn't come to preach. You may think we're cowards, but we're really bold as brass, and you can take your pencil. I'm glad to see your education hasn't been neglected. The BC Department of Education thought this commentary very rude. They demanded apologies from all the committee, and they warned without them they might be sued. The committee said, apologize? Well, our answer is no thanks. And we wonder just how you know what fits in all those blanks. You may think we're censors, but we're only here to teach. You may think we're preachers, but we didn't come to preach. You may think we're cowards, but really bold as brass, and you can take your pencil.
Department of Education should have learned a useful lesson here. If you want to protect someone from coarse, brutal language, you should first make sure it's strange to his ear. If you want to test his knowledge, sing a chorus from this song. If he knows the words already, he'll smile before too long. You may think we're censored, but we're only here to teach. You may think we're preachers, but we didn't come to preach. You may think we're cowards, but we're really bold as brass. And you can take your
that wonderful combination there of the political comment and such tremendous humor, right?
Yes, yes. After that kind of stuff, it's very hard to take them seriously.
Yes, truly.
And the same is true for this next cut. This was an event which happened in the spring and summer of 1968. I recall it very strongly because I emigrated to Canada in June 68, and I worked two blocks from the courthouse, which is now the art gallery, and they had just finished building this wonderful fountain in the middle of the courtyard. Well, 68, if you recall, was a summer of love.
Yes.
And this is the year after Expo, and Canada was very big, and so it was a time of unlocking, opening of all kinds of possibilities. But in Vancouver, the mayor was Tom Campbell, and he had a prosecutor, the city prosecutor, called Stu McMorran. And I don't know whether it was Stu McMorran's idea or whether it was Tom Campbell's idea, but between them they managed to work up a really good hate for hippies. And they had a law on the books they could use against hippies. It was called the Vagrancy Bylaw. And Section C of the Vagrancy Bylaw allowed the police to arrest for vagrancy anybody who could not, who, when found in a public place, could not give a good account of themselves, by which the cops interpreted to mean you had to have some money in your pocket.
Uh-huh.
So what happened was, Campbell and McMorran used this bylaw to arrest hippies who had done nothing at all. Well, the Civil Liberties Union were extremely offended by this, and there was all kinds of little micro demonstrations in which people would go down to the fountain and wait to be arrested. Anyway, there was a huge kerfuffle about it, and eventually the police were defeated. That, in those days, these things, which now seem so trivial, were huge issues. Well, this is the song that she made about the fountain.
Vancouver has a fountain in the center of the town, with places where you walk about and grass where you sit down. But if you think of going there, a fountain for to view, change your mind, try something else, is my advice to you. Go and climb a mountain or take a boat for a sail, but don't go look at the fountain or you might wind up in jail. Everybody, go and climb a mountain or take a boat for a sail, but don't go look at the fountain or you might wind up in jail. The man who built the fountain had a nice idea in mind, that folks would come from near and far a meeting place to find. But don't attempt to use it as a meeting place this spring. They've put up a great big sign that says no loitering. Go and climb a mountain or take a boat for a sail, but don't go look at the fountain or you might wind up in jail. Policemen keep an eye upon the people passing by, so walk along quite briskly and to loiter do not try. They've got a bunch of warrants and the names are all left blank. All they do is write them in and throw you in the tank. Go and climb a mountain or take a boat for a sail, but don't go look at the fountain or you might wind up in jail. Now every town in Europe has a central city square with benches for the visitors who like to gather there. Vancouver has a center and is too unique for words.
It's reserved for flowers and for butterflies and birds.
Go and climb a mountain or take a boat for sail, but don't go look at the fountain or you might wind up in jail.
I wish people could see John and Rika here singing along with Vera Johnson, too. You know all these songs, of course.
Yes. She just managed to pick these issues and make fun with them. This next song is a little bit more serious. And in her short autobiography in the bulletin that we mentioned earlier, she says that she started becoming a folk singer. It was because she wanted to make the world a better place. And, you know, at the end of her little autobiography, she kind of talks about the fountain and says, well, that changed, so I guess I did kind of make the world a better place. But this song was about a man named Thomas Arkenstall, and he lived in England in the 19th century and had a very... And she read his story, and the story moved her such that she made the song. And this is one of her few songs that doesn't have a humorous part to it, but is in a still very compelling.
Just about 100 years ago, on an April day he died. In the Birmingham Canal he drowned, and they called it suicide. You're in your grave, Thomas Arkenstall. Can't raise your voice, can't complain at all. But we know who to blame for your grief and shame, and we'll fight them in your name, Thomas Arkenstall. Thomas Arkenstall was 33, made umbrellas as his trade, but the jobs were few and far between, and the work was poorly paid. You're in your grave, Thomas Arkenstall. Can't raise your voice, can't complain at all. But we know who to blame for your grief and shame, and we'll fight them in your name, Thomas Arkenstall. Sold the furniture to pay for food. Sold the table, chairs and bed. In the corner where they slept at night, shavings on the floor were spread. You're in your grave, Thomas Arkenstall. Can't raise your voice, can't complain at all. But we know who to blame for your grief and shame, and we'll fight them in your name, Thomas Arkenstall. Saw his wife and children famishing, shared their bitterness and pain. He would mutter as he walked the streets, like a man who's gone insane. You're in your grave, Thomas Arkenstall. Can't raise your voice, can't complain at all. His head said, God help you. You're in your grave, Thomas Arkenstall. And
It is a very, very different song from Vera Johnson.
Yes, and I remember very strongly her singing it with a great deal of passion and feeling, and it pretty much summed up what her beliefs were. And the thing that was so wonderful about her is that she was able to do all of this stuff and have these beliefs and feel the kind of empathy that she felt for a character like that, and yet maintain the wit and humor that was her trademark.
But her work was all of a piece. It was even the funny stuff and the sad stuff. You had a sense these are the songs of an intelligent mind at work dealing with the questions of the day and taking a position. That was a song about who she was against, and this last song is a song about what she stands for. It's called "That's What I Believe."
Some people say you mustn't take a drink or you'll damn your soul to hell. Other people say you have to go to church and maybe Sunday school as well. Some folks claim a man is born to sin and a woman bound to grieve. Well, maybe they're right and I'm all wet, but here's what I believe.
I believe in living, enjoy it while you can, in kindness and in gentleness, giving your brother a helping hand. Work and laugh and love and play, we haven't got you.
Is moving through space. Neither do I know what made a cell mutate and started off the human race. There's just one thing that I know for sure, though to you it may seem odd, that we are all part of something great, and that's what I call God.
I believe in living, enjoy it while you can, in kindness and in gentleness, giving your brother a helping hand. Work and laugh and love and play, we haven't got too long to stay, so make the most of every day. That's what I believe.
Hell's not a place, it's just a state of mind, it's a sickness of the soul. Heaven's how you feel when things are going right and you think you're gonna make your goal. Good is anything that nurtures life and makes it thrive and bloom. And evil's whatever cripples life and threatens it with doom.
I believe in living, enjoy it while you can, in kindness and in gentleness, and giving your brother a helping hand. Work and laugh and love and play, we haven't got to.
Each man ought to do the best he can, be himself, not what he is not. Even if you think you're rather weak on brain, just make the most of what you've got. Just remember that you're not alone, you're a part of all mankind. And man can achieve tremendous things when he makes up his mind.
I believe in living.
There's an anthem.
An anthem for everybody.
Yes. And something she lived up to and has lived up to, too, Vera Johnson, right?
Her entire life. It's just what a wonderful model.
You were mentioning all the other things that she's done.
This is a slight flavor of what Vera's done. 50 short stories, 18 plays and radio and TV scripts. I mean, all the stuff, and raising kids and all through all this stuff.
Three daughters.
It's just wonderful. A model for everybody.
Well, thank you so much, Rika and John, and thanks so much, Vera, if she happens to be listening this morning, for all the great music.
Nice?
It would be
yeah.
so nice. My thanks to John Bartlett and Rika Rubsat for that tribute to Vera Johnson. And that is our time on North by Northwest for this morning. Thanks so much for starting your day here on CBC Radio 1. I'm Cheryl McKay. Happy Father's Day again to everyone celebrating. And I hope to see you back next Saturday morning right after the 6 o'clock news right here on North by Northwest. Bye for now.